morning, right? 28th, prisoner remembers Cotton, Herman, Springer, Sund, and Pierce. First bill we're going to take up today is House Bill 289, the bill that contains several different revisions to Title 38, and we've been working with the Department of Natural Resources on this bill. One of the things that I'm going to announce now, and I'm sure you'll hear this many times, is that the bill does not is not intended to address the specific court case, Alaska Survival versus the Department of Natural Resources. The issue in this case has been remanded to the Department of Natural Resources for reconsideration. I've asked the Department of Natural Resources to provide assurance that the bill will not affect the reconsideration. With that, I'd ask the representative from the Department of Natural Resources to join us at the table, as well as our fund staff, Ned Farquhar, to give a brief analysis of the bill. By the way, Anchorage, how many people are there that would like to testify?
So far, there are two.
All right, please stand by. Ned, would you like to walk the committee just as briefly as possible through the bill on a second?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The major point of the bill is to address land planning and classification issues that were raised in the Supreme Court decision last August, Alaska Survival versus DNR, which basically found, where the Supreme Court basically found that DNR had acted illegally by issuing a land classification leading to a land disposal before completing an area plan for the affected area. That decision is in your bill packets. The Supreme Court decision could have important ramifications for economic uses of state land in areas of the state where area plans have not yet been completed. And to allow the situation to continue could jeopardize past and future land management decisions, including many that are important for local and statewide economic development, such as rights of way, leases, sand and gravel sales, and other resource disposals. The bill is not intended to allow programmatic land disposals, such as homesteads or subdivisions, before the completion of an area plan, but does allow other sorts of resource classifications and disposals prior to the completion of an area plan based on a site-specific plan that would go through the same sort of a process in resource decision-making as an area plan, only on a more abbreviated basis with public notice and other required steps. The bill also includes some sections to clean up parts of Title 38 where there are inconsistencies, and I would draw your attention to Representative Cotton's memo to the committee. There's a sectional analysis attached to that. Any section that doesn't have an asterisk in front of it is does not relate to the planning sections. And for instance, Section 8 would conform the definition of a short-term negotiated lease with a change adopted in the text of Title 38 in 1984. I don't think we need to walk through all those non-planning changes. Probably the most substantive other change is in Section 9, which amends the best interest finding section of Title 38 to allow the commissioner to re-offer lands that have been offered under a previous best interest finding completed within 3 years before the re-offer. This would allow the commissioner to re-offer lands and lease oil and gas leases that have been rescinded or were not sold at a lease sale. It also allows the commissioner to incorporate lands contiguous or adjacent to a scheduled lease sale within the same best interest finding. A couple of amendments have been suggested to that section, and they're described briefly in the sectional analysis. And, Mr. Chairman, I guess then I just turn it over to Tom Hawkins from DNR to discuss the department's position on the bill.
Thank you. The as you can see from the sectional analysis, and for those online, the other sections 10 allows the homestead permit holders to exchange permits within a homestead area for consolidation, and Section 11 makes a change that we made in an earlier bill, that's House Bill 111, that allows for 5 years for survey of a homestead parcel instead of two. Go ahead, Mr. Hawkins, you want to speak to the Department of Natural Resources?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Hawkins. I'm the Director of the Division of Land and Water Management in the Department of Natural Resources. The description of the bill given to you by Mr. Farquhar did identify the primary reason for the department's support, and that is the situation that has resulted from the Supreme Court's decision in Alaska Survival. Basically, what we have is a conflict between two statutes, one which has been on the books since the early 1960s, a second which was adopted in 1978. 3805-300 directs the commissioner to classify lands when necessary and proper. 3804-065 instructs the commissioner to prepare comprehensive area or regional plans and use them as a basis for classification. The Supreme Court decision in the survival case said that the adoption of an area plan is necessary for the department to take a classification action. Not wishing to do violence to the planning process, because we think it's a very orderly and useful way for Alaskans to participate in land management decisions, our belief is that the legislature intended us to do both. They intended us to prepare area comprehensive plans, and they also intended us to make land classifications when it was necessary and proper. And we think that both of those abilities need to be available to the department. Right now, about 44% of Alaska's 85 million acres of land has an adopted comprehensive plan. We have area plans underway in another almost 20 million acres. But even with the adoption of those, we'll be millions of acres short of having that sort of comprehensive basis for land classifications. There are places in Alaska where the state doesn't own enough land to focus on a comprehensive plan. There are 77 million acres of tidelands currently unclassified that we're unable to take an action on because there's no basis. And since the survival decision, we have taken no classification actions that aren't based on an area plan. As a result, we've found many dozens of actions, from as small as sale of Forest Service permits in Hope to important tideland leases to the city in Nome, blocked by our inability to classify. The three things that the bill does, first, it allows the commissioner to adopt classification orders based on site-specific land planning reports when it's necessary and proper. Second, the bill confirms existing classifications. And third, and finally, the bill provides for the use of locally developed plans adopted by other governmental entities or municipalities when the findings of those plans are appropriate and in the state interest. We recognize for that third that we are still required to go through public notice and agency review. But given the amount of planning that's going on in Alaska, it seemed economical of us to take advantage of CRSA plans or Forest Service plans when their findings were appropriate to the state interests.
Could you respond to the to our request there for assurances that this would not affect the reconsideration of the Alaska Survival case?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd do that in two fashions. I submitted some comments, and I guess the best way to respond to that is that The Supreme Court was very clear when it remanded the Chase decision to the department as to what they wanted us to do in Chase. What they wanted us to do with the rest of Alaska, they were less clear about. And consequently, in their remand, they told us to reconsider our decision. So before we can proceed with any action in the Chase area, we need to open up subunit 4 of the Susitna Area Plan and take a look at change conditions and reconsider what the department decided there. One place where in our comments I suggested a change in the draft legislation is in section 14, because my understanding is some feel that that particular section requires the commissioner to proceed with Chase as originally classified. And you'll see in our last page of our comments, we suggested language to make it clear that that's not what we propose. What we do propose is to reopen the planning process, reopen the public review, and do again the Chase subunit, which is Unit 4 in the Susitna Area Plan. It's the rest of Alaska that this particular bill addresses.
Thank you. Are there questions for the director at the moment, Mr. Springer?
Yeah, I just have one question. I looked through the DNR budget submittal, and it looked, for example, for the northern regions, I looked in the budget, and it looked to me like in the northern region, that section that deals with land disposal actions has been virtually eliminated. And ADL division has really received real hard cuts, so I don't know how that fits together with a policy statement like that, how you physically are going to do it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, that's an apt observation. Of the three budgets currently under consideration, one has a small land disposal component. The other two have completely eliminated any attention to land disposal. So that is clearly one of the change conditions that would be reconsidered in the Chase study.
Thank you. Mr. Schultz, would you mind letting us get these people around the line here? We're going to have to adjourn at 8:30 this morning. Unexpectedly, we're having a majority caucus. In Anchorage, I know Jim Sykes is there, and if you could be brief, Jim, we'll let you go ahead, but we've just got enough for a couple minutes from each of the people that want to testify. Is that possible?
This is the first opportunity we've had to testify before any committee in the legislature, and we would like some adequate time to talk about these points. Would it be better to talk about them later?
We'll have another public hearing at a later date. So if you don't feel like you're able to deliver any meaningful remarks in just a couple of minutes, we will ask you to join us again the next time we have a hearing on the subject. And I'm not sure exactly when that's going to be, but we'll try to keep you informed.
Well, I think I would rather delay my comments until then, Representative Cotton, because there are some issues here that are not being considered in this bill. And while we in the Chase vicinity are generally very happy with what is in HB 289 in terms of requiring the land classifications for home sites, homesteads, and lotteries, there are a number of other lands that deserve equal kind of consideration, and it takes a little bit of time to discuss the question of what kind of process can be created that will protect the public and to give DNR the ability to classify lands without a regional plan. And so we're not ready to quite give DNR the free hand that we feel that they have in HB 289 at this time. I would like the opportunity to speak to those things at a later date.
We'll try it. We'll make every effort to accommodate you there, sir. Can we ask you to get a hold of my staff here, Ned Farquhar, and communicate as much as you can and in a way that we could distribute the information to the committee in the meantime?
Yes, hopefully. I did send some comments to the committee by telecopy yesterday. I hope that they receive that, and then I can talk at a later time. Cliff Eames is here, though he would like to speak at this time. I will do that. Thank you, sir.
Okay, now just a couple minutes, and that's going to be it.
Thank you, Representative Cotton. Actually, I wanted to do what Jim Sykes did, and that is
request that we have an opportunity at a later time to testify. We have been denied a teleconference by Senate Resources, and we were encouraged when we thought we'd have a chance here before House Resources. We think this is probably the most important land use bill that the legislature is considering this year, and I would like to reserve my comments until we have time to discuss them in a little bit more depth.
Okay, thank you very much. We apologize again. This was unexpected. We're trying to put the budget to bed, so there's a real need for this majority Congress.
No, we understand. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll keep everyone informed as to when the bill will be able to come back up in front of the committee.
Great. Thank you. Talkeetna
is also with you.
Is there someone from Talkeetna that wishes to
yes,
reserve some time for later?
I'm Paul Branson in Talkeetna. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. But we're going to have to close the hearing on this bill at this point, and we will keep you informed as to the date and time of the next opportunity to testify.
All right. We appreciate that, and we do hope there will be ample time for public comment in the future on this bill.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate the community's patience with the brevity of the situation this morning. There's also another bill in front of us that. Sponsored by one of the members of the committee, Mr. Hoffman. You can sit there if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To make the opening remarks on this piece of legislation, I wonder if the committee would request that Larry Kimball to come up and make that presentation.
At your pleasure, sir. Larry? I don't believe anybody's interested in this bill. 198. Are there people on the teleconference site that are interested in House Bill 198? House Bill 198, last chance. We're going to go offline.
I'd like to hear a few minutes of that, please.
Certainly. Please use your teleconference mic, Larry. Get as close as you can. Push that button forward. There you go.
Would it be appropriate, too, if I could request Elizabeth LeBlanc from Chilista Corporation join me?
Certainly.
The bill that you have before you, 198, is a product of about 3 years of work by various state agencies, private landowners, particularly Native corporations, Alaska Federation of Natives, which I represent, and the state agencies that are seated as members of the Land Use Council. With the transfer of lands that was occurring in this state over the last few years, both with the Statehood Act, which transferred federal lands to the state, with the ANCSA, which 44 million acres to Native corporations, primarily large tracts, remote locations, and also with the reclassification of the federal CSUs into more restrictive uses. The Land Use Council took upon itself about 3 years ago to take a look at trespass problems that were created in the state. You're probably aware that most of the trespass laws, in fact, all of the trespass laws that were previously on the books, were put there when there were smaller parcels of land. These large conveyances that I discussed earlier were not in place. We have a situation where we now have public lands being transferred to private ownership in large tracts, very hard to monitor, very hard to keep track of. What generated out of the review that the Land Use Council did was a study that identified some of the problems of both easements and trespass. Among those was the liability issues that our current landowners have under common law. There was an enforcement problem. We talked to public safety. Public safety, if you're aware, published a report a few years ago which identified some of those problems also. The difficulties in both prosecution and monitoring of these areas. The result of that effort, the Land Use Council put together a team of people, AFN represented there, Department of Natural Resources, Fish and Game, as well as the federal agencies, Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service. came up with what we called a white paper that went to the council. And the white paper looked at how you could, in a cooperative way, as land managers, address the trespass situation. The effort originally got off, I suppose, which is common, to one of prosecute everybody that's out there, anybody that steps over the line. Unfortunately, nobody could tell where the line was because nothing was surveyed. We are still probably about 10 million acres from being conveyed under ANCSA. So there was a lot of confusion. And if you add that with the general use that the public had prior to ANCSA, prior to statehood, prior to ANILCA, you have a use pattern out there that seems to be what anybody wants to do. It didn't seem reasonable to the committee to look at a prosecution theme in this or try to go out and get every trespasser. And the majority of the trespasses were what we had called casual trespass or inadvertent trespass. What happened was a report came down. The recommendations concentrated on more educational purposes than anything, plus a good neighbor policy of the various land managers cooperating on watching other people's property, making people aware that they were either on private or public property. One of the results was a great deal of coordination in the mapping of private lands, public lands, where easements were. There are a multitude of brochures now being done for the public. DNR, for example, has done work with the Bristol Bay Native Corporation to build an easement atlas which identifies all the easements in their region. It's available to the public. We've worked with the Forest Service, the Park Service, the state in their area planning to identify all of these particular land statuses that are out there. The idea, of course, is to educate the public, not to necessarily try to come down hard because someone doesn't know where the lines are. We ourselves don't know where the lines are. One of the results, too, was a recommendation that a piece of legislation, or at least a review of the current state legislation, be done by a group, and that group happened to be the Alaska Federation of Natives. The regional corporations then got together, put a subcommittee together, and did the research on it. The idea being that the Land Use Council wasn't in a position to recommend legislation, but they could recommend that it be reviewed and any delinquencies in that or any shortcomings be brought out in a bill. The bill that we're looking at here, rather than take a hard line on trespassers, the bill is modeled after the Recreational Use Act, which 42 states or 43 states now have. And what it primarily does, and Elizabeth will give you a very quick sketch of the sections, but what it basically does is takes away some of the traditional liabilities to a landowner and encourages them to allow the public use of the land for recreational purposes. It also, in the bill, you will find a few what we call house cleaning sections, which looked at some of the existing law, and particularly in the notice sections, where we felt that it was unreasonable, given the large tracts of land, literally millions of acres, to be posting under the requirements that they have here. What we're looking at is reasonable posting, reasonable notice, several ways to do it. Section 6 and 7 of the bill attach that point. And we're looking at the liability questions being released so that the incentive for private land to be used for public recreation purposes will be there.
As Larry mentioned, I'll briefly explain the various sections. Probably the most important section to the bill is Section 1, and that is basically the language that would implement the Recreation Use Act. The primary purpose of this sort of language is to encourage private landowners to open their land to the public for recreational use. In doing this, the private landowner is then protected from liability suits. A lot of people have questioned and asked us, well, can you legally do this? The courts in the lower 48 have held that these kind of laws are constitutional, do not violate equal protection, and still give both the landowner and the recreational user certain protections. The way they've gotten around this is if a landowner is willful or malicious in any of his actions, then he could still be held liable. These kind of statutes have been very effective in other states in promoting the use of private lands for recreational purposes. And in a state like Alaska, where there's so much private land now, we thought the same type of approach would now be appropriate. Section 2 is more of a technical amendment in that it's starting to recognize a new form of trespass that's now occurring very commonly up here, and that is geophysical trespass. Private landowners are finding quite often that there are illegal exploration activities going on their lands, and there's a lot of concern because this is having economic consequences to the landowners. They're losing an opportunity to lease or sell their exploration rights, or if somebody does these kind of activities and finds out that there is a valuable mineral or there isn't a valuable mineral, it puts the landowner in an unequal bargaining position when it comes time to do something with his land. So this is a new concern. Section 3 is a clarification of existing law in that trespassers right now run it quite often can sue a landowner, whether it be the state or a private landowner, for injuries that they receive on the land. We are expanding this to include both improved and unimproved land so that if there's a situation where you don't know about an old road, an airstrip or something like that, you as a landowner would be protected from a liability suit. Section 4 is just a further expansion of this particular change. Then Section 5 has been another area that is more of a clarification of state law. This identifies specific types of activities which would now constitute a trespass activity in Alaska. We felt it's very important to specifically outline what kind of activities are criminal in nature. This way it makes it easier for the public to understand what is or isn't a trespass activity, and it also helps the landowner know when he should or should not contact a law enforcement agency. Finally, Section 6 and 7 are a clarification of the posting law. With a clarification of the posting law, it should be easier to know when law enforcement agencies are needed for prosecution. It takes and delineates what kind of obligations the landowner has in terms of protecting his property, and it also makes it easier on the public to understand when or when he may not be trespassing. And with these changes, we hope that the state laws would be easier to enforce and thereby eliminating a lot of the trespass problems.
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, is it possible, both of these people came to testify from Anchorage, is it possible to hear additional testimony on Wednesday?
In fact, it would be okay with me. We could meet like late this afternoon, after 4 o'clock. I don't know how everybody else is on this. I'd hate to make them stay over. So what's the rest of the committee like later this afternoon? 4 o'clock,
Mr. Chairman, I did just a question. After the testimony, are you planning on moving the bill today?
I have a feeling we're probably not going to move it today, just because I think that there's probably going to be a lot of questions about it.
Just to provide information.
Okay, then great.
Okay, so we will recess the committee until 4 o'clock this afternoon. And at that point, we'll continue deliberations on House Bill 198.
Do you know where Thunderbird Waterfalls is here on this map? Is that the waterfall right there where it says? Or do you know?
I don't know. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
You flunked that quiz for today. Jeez.
So much for the green.
Yeah.
Well, does it look like a waterfall?
Well, I've been there before, but I didn't see a map. There's a good chance it could be the waterfall.
I forgot what that was. Larry, I'm sorry. I forgot.
Elizabeth,
all right. If you'd like to join us again here.
Thank you.
You can kind of remind us where we were and get us back into thinking about House Bill 198 again.
So we had gone through some of the background to where the effort generated from the Land Use Council, some of the products that had come out of the effort, and one of them being legislation which was undefined by the Glasgow Land Use Council, but nevertheless indicated that there was a need to review the state laws given the land transfers that were taking place and the fact that the older trespass laws were generated when they're very small parcels, mostly federal ownership. And Elizabeth had gone through a section-by-section analysis, a very, very brief one, of what the bill means and what's intended.
I'm here. You're the yes vote?
Thank you, John. We didn't really need a quorum technically. We were recessed until 4 o'clock.
I'll be right back.
He's the chairman of the committee that will get the bill next, so it would be nice if we could get him here, but please continue, Larry.
Again, the approach to the trespass problems that we've got in the state, particularly the private sector, is more one of a long-term educational process. This bill incorporates some of that. The real trade-off here is an option by the private landowner, particularly native corporations, to allow the use of the lands for recreational purposes in exchange for a decrease in the liability, question. We have also done a couple of things that would change the posting requirements or notice requirements of private property, and those are in Section 6 and 7, and they're simply more in line with the situation we have up here with large remote tracts. The current law is not clear, number one, on how to post it. It says that it should be in a reasonable manner, but down south they've suggested that court cases have suggested that around 100 feet per sign. If you would assign these large tracts of land out here every 100 feet, you may as well file Chapter 11 because it would be all over. And the other case of monitoring. So they're more reasonable, noticing, tightening up a little bit of the trespass, but in exchange providing an opportunity to use those lands without being prosecuted. And that's really the crux of the bill. It comes out of the recreation, the Recreational Use Act, the model recreation, which most states already have. There are, in the materials that you've got, there are a good deal of legal citations in the back, particularly on this analysis, section by section analysis. And legal citations in the back are cases that have, in states that have adopted the Model Recreational Use Act.
So you have, there are some other examples of states that use the Model Use Act?
Yes, the footnotes on page, that run from page 10 through page 18 are the ones that are footnoted in the text of the analysis.
There were, what, some 32 states?
43 states actually have adopted it, and sometimes in varying forms depending what they wanted, but the states that we mostly concentrated on in the research was about 27 or 8 states that had large tracts, agricultural states, Midwest, with large difficult trespass problems. The eastern states weren't quite as bad because the New England states, for example, stone walls around every piece of property there, that's enough to signify private ownership as opposed to some posting. So, but we concentrated on states that had a similar situation here. A lot of hunting and fishing, a lot of recreational uses, snow machining, skiing. That's another thing up here that's causing private landowners, both in the Kenai and the Anchorage area, some problems, particularly the large tracts in the Kenai.
In terms of other states that have enacted similar trespass laws, all the western states have either similar posting laws, they all have some sort of a recreational use law, and the courts in California have also had some of the most liberal interpretations in terms of protecting and indemnifying a landowner from liability claims. Idaho currently has the most liberal Recreational Use Act in that they just about protect the landowner from everything, even if he acts willfully and maliciously. And there's been quite a bit of debate back and forth in the courts as to how to deal with this situation. And there have been some cases, and they've, for the most part, upheld the state statute. So we've got a very extreme case, even in the western part of the world, where there is a lot of hunting, fishing, outdoor camping, and recreation being a primary activity.
Does there seem to be any variation among those who receive consideration for use of the land as far as the indemnification is concerned?
The range is everything from a very strict interpretation where even an application fee, some states have said an application fee could be considered to be consideration. There have been court cases that have excluded an application fee. Others specifically look at if you're leasing your land to a state or another party or a municipality, the payment you receive is not considered consideration, so you're still protected in those kind of instances. So there is a broad range. Up here, that was one of the issues that we had a lot of questions on and quite a bit of debate, because several of the native corporations have permits and they charge a varying range of fees, everything from a couple dollars to, I guess, several hundred dollars for different kinds of application fees.
Friends, can you give us any examples to help us understand some of the particular situations that for Chilista may be involved with as far as compensation for recreational use?
Okay, right now in the Chilista region, we have some of the village corporations are doing permits where they do not charge anything if a person wants to do wood cutting. Cook Inlet region, however, charges a nominal fee for people who want to get a permit for overnight hiking and camping. Some of the Bristol Bay villages have taken, and they're charging guides very, very large fees for coming onto their lands. And I guess we would have to look at specifically the type of fee and the amount in the Bristol Bay case to see if it's an application fee versus an actual fee for the use of the land. If it's anything other than an administrative fee, the courts tend to view that as being compensation for use of the land, so you'd have to be very specific in that it's got to be just for processing a permit or some sort of application.
Well, that's why I'm reading the definition of compensation does not include a processing or application fee for a permit to use the land for recreational purposes.
Usually.
So the guide, what about the guide then? When he pays the village corporation to use the village corporation's property, assuming for they're just taking a client hunting on
I would
property.
Think if it's anything besides a fee that's for processing that application, then that would be viewed as compensation, and that property owner would then be held liable should something happen. There have been cases in terms of, I don't know if you're familiar with the Golden Eagle, I think is the national camping permit, and there have been states that had camp permits that they would issue, and people challenged the state when there was an accident, and some of those permits have been upheld as being an application fee and not actually holding the landowner liable.
One of the areas, too, that you might be familiar with was the Clutnan Corporation about 2 or 3 years ago, without really realizing, I think, what the liability question was here, had a newspaper article, I think it was about a full page in the newspapers, allowing people to hunt on their properties for a $50 fee. It turned out that was a payment for the use of the property, and liability rode with it. And once that was suddenly discovered, the end of the newspaper article and the end of the allowance, but it was one of these things that didn't understand where liability went with the fee.
New issue to me. Seems like it's basically a legal issue as much as anything here. The posting permits, the identification, the liability questions, they all seem to be sort of legal issues. I'm not sure. I haven't really identified any resource issues here so far.
Well, there is one resource issue, I think, that that it's perhaps a little vague, but what it, again, it's a trade-off. It allows or generates at least an opportunity for more private land to be used for recreational purposes. That's basically what the model recreational land use bill does. There was another thing. There was a public hearings here in the state about a year ago by the President's Commission on Outdoor Recreation, and we took part in that. Anchorage took part in it, making recommendations on how to better provide recreational opportunities. Though general in nature, one of the things that they did come up with, and again, lack of federal funds and their deficit problems, was the idea of joint ventures between private sector or opportunities for private sector to contribute more to the recreational needs through the use of, say, vacant or unused land or that type. They weren't specific other than to employ some kind of a trust fund, and that's being studied now in Washington, and I would assume each state would probably get an opportunity to participate in something like that. But the resource is that it provides more use of private land, something that a state wouldn't have to require.
Yeah, I got a whole several pages full of questions. But here is again the question, is it resource or is it legal? I just want to throw a few things out. Navigable water bodies exempt under ANSA. Private land like homesteads or something, how they interface with that. And when the usage of the land, for example, in relation to traditional or non-traditional subsistence uses, trapping and so on. The reasons I bring also is up, we have experienced in any category quite a few problems in recent years. For example, regarding the rear end hunting and trapping, for example, the people up in Nana made it a prerequisite that only stockholders had the right to trap and hunt on their lands without compensation. But that, of course, excludes then other private lands, allotments and so on, which are not the result of ANSA. Also in that bill here, I don't see anything that specifically makes it restrictive to native lands, right? It's a general...
It's
private land.
Any private land.
So any private land. I think a lot of it is going to center around that definition of recreational purposes, which means if the sole criteria is without compensation, then it really has nothing to do with the type of activity, if it is hunting, berry picking, camping, hiking, or bird watching, or whatever. So that seems to be the biggest stickler, but that stickler is only in there from the way I read it in relationship to liability. That's the intent of it, right? If the landowner objects to any of those activities from the standpoint that they constitute land use which he doesn't like or she doesn't like, then they can put that restriction on still regardless, right?
Certain. All it does is, again, and I think you're right, it offers an opportunity that if they don't have a problem with somebody using those lands, they can simply, and if it is recreational purposes, they are taking away the liability of somebody doing anything on there. We're well familiar, in fact, the people who have helped draft this bill and the corporation has been involved, that's part of the problem that's been there. I think if there are critical areas, and the reason for Section 6 and 7, the posting requirements, if there are critical areas to those private landowners, they will post those. Yeah.
Typically, in the lower 48 states that have this, a lot of states that have these laws also have laws on their books that allow a private landowner to close their lands to hunting and fishing as long as he's posted his lands. So up here, a native corporation or a homesteader could do the same thing because the posting requirement would be uniform. If you post your land, you've taken care of your trespass problems, and you can restrict the use of your land any way you see fit, even though this particular act is in place.
Well, the posting requirements, of course, is one of the big stickers in the whole thing, especially with our, with our square layout of land, where you have on one corner always adjoining lanes, in the absence of physical obstructions like fences or ditches or whatever.
Well, we have, of course, played with numbers in trying to resolve the problems of a couple of years ago and trying to treat the trespass problems. and have taken acreages and gone by the old adage of 100, a sign every 100 feet, and we found out that it's 200 to 300. Hunting and fishing, and after discussions with legislative council, they felt that this was a better definition to do it based on whether it's compensated or not. That's where that came from.
I'm just trying to follow here. I'm looking at the 6 and 7 now. C, notice against trespassing given by posting in the manner described in C of this section. Place at each roadway or apparent way of access into the property. What is an apparent way of access onto the property?
A lot of, there are trails on throughout the state. There are the 17B easements that go through pieces of property, and those have been, a lot of times those are identified on maps, and that is something that could be posted. We've even debated, could an airport be posted? You know, a lot of times the only way into a village is at an airport. Could you post the airport as an access point? So there are, you know, a wide range of different things.
You mean like you could put a no trespassing sign that could be read from the air that would prevent a person from landing?
Well, putting, the idea we were thinking is if I can, the airport, the local airport, you have a map showing your land boundaries with an explanation of that these are private lands, who to contact, kind of where are common points, and then mark some of those common points. That would be a form of posting at an access point. A situation we run into a lot of times out on some of the rivers is that people use different rivers and sloughs over and over, and people are familiar with those points, river guides who might be traversing the river, those kind of points where they typically camp or pull out their boats. That's a real common problem out on, like, the Good News. We marked an easement. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and there's a sign on four corners on a sandbar saying that this is a place where you can camp, and if you're off the sandbar, you're trespassing.
Tom, were you going to want to testify?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here to answer questions, but
does the department have an official position on the legislation?
Generally supportive, Mr. Chairman. Sort of jealous that some of these provisions don't to state land.
As far as which ones? Posting?
primarily the limits of liability, because it's a big question.
Did you have anything else? Did you have other people you wanted to have time for? Did you have something else, Greg?
No, but there are some other people here that I think don't want to speak to the panel.
Okay. They can join us. It looks like there's room at the table. We don't have a quorum, so we won't be able to act on the legislation today. I'm beginning to feel like I don't have a problem about the resource issue. I do want to read a couple of comparisons between this Recreational Use Act and what some of the other states have. And apparently that's in our packet here. I haven't read it yet.
Probably the easiest reference to look to if you have a staff aide you want to send them out digging for information is the footnote number 4 lists all the citations for the states that have the act, and this was current as of last spring, so unless they've amended it, these citations should be the same. And that also holds true for footnote 13, and footnote 14 discuss in more detail sections dealing with compensation, and malicious and willful, because there have been, there was a lot of concern on the part of the legislative council that this was contrary to normal tort and liability laws, and we've had to go back and forth. And
with our drafting, what do you mean?
Right, and we were able to show where in the statutes they've dealt with this. So it would be footnote 4, 13, and 14.
Who did the drafting?
Dick Bradley.
Could we hear from you, sir? I have to leave in just a minute or two. If you'd like to just grab this other seat here, it's fine.
Very sure, Mr. Chairman. Bert Grist, Community Region Affairs, Deputy Commissioner. Our position is fairly the same as the Department of Natural Resources. Well, ours primarily comes from the fact that it reduces liability of private landowners when used for recreational purposes are considered, particularly when the municipalities develop land use plans around within their jurisdictional bond. And this basically provides incentive for a private landowner to make some of the land available to the public for recreational purposes. That's basically where we're coming from. We want to have that conveyed.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Well, it's okay with you. I'm here in the meeting.
but
I am not going to propose moving the bill along here fairly quickly.
When can we see the action?
Let's officially postpone it until tomorrow, and at that time determine when we're going to be able to do it. So
well, I had some. I was wondering if Representative Springer's questions were answered to your satisfaction.
Well, sorry about talking. I'm still moving it around. In my head, I see the liability question, but I see a whole bunch of other problems which I want to think over in relation to that bill. For example, we were talking about posting sandbars, the question of navigability.
I'll see you in the morning. This is the question of navigability
of the river.